Good evening, everyone. I make it about 6 o'clock, so I think we'll make a start. Thank you all for joining us tonight here at the library in Ipswich. We will be talking to you today at this public meeting about our proposals to develop a Centre for Orthopaedic Elective Surgery at Colchester Hospital. My name's Rebecca Driver. I'm the Director of Communications at Ipswich and Colchester Hospitals, which is part of the Trust, East Suffolk and North Essex Foundation Trust. And I'll be facilitating tonight. And as you can see, and we'll introduce them in a moment, we have a panel of experts who are here to take your questions. As I've said, this is part of the public consultation process. We have 11 of these meetings taking place this week and next across Ipswich and East Suffolk, and also North East Essex. This is the fourth of those meetings, and if you've got any friends or relatives or colleagues who'd like to come to the other meetings and you want the details, they're in the consultation document that you have on your chair. Just thinking about our agenda for tonight, we have a maximum of 2 hours for tonight, so we will be finishing at 8 o'clock. But we will be talking for about 20, 25 minutes just at the beginning of the meeting, and then the large... And then the large part of the meeting will be dedicated to questions from all of you and answers from the panel. So I'll start by asking our panel to introduce themselves, beginning with Dr. Shane Gordon, please.
Hello, everyone. I'm Shane Gordon. I'm Director of Strategy at the Trust, and I'm a GP by background.
I'm Crawford Jamieson, Medical Director at Ipswich and Colchester, and I'm a consultant physician working in both hospitals.
I'm Mark Shenton, GP Chair of Ipswich and East Suffolk CCG.
I'm Mark Werfler, I'm a consultant orthopaedic surgeon, and I'm the Clinical Director of the Musculoskeletal Directorate for ESNEFT.
Thank you very much. And just before we begin, I'll just run through a little of the general housekeeping so we can all be safe and make tonight work well. There are no fire alarms planned for tonight, but if something does go off, then we will need to leave the building. The exits are here behind the panel or through the door you came in on. We do also have a hearing loop in operation, so if you have a hearing aid, if you just switch it to T, then you should be able to hear everything that's going on. Please do switch your do come in and take a seat. Please do switch your mobile phones off, unless perhaps you're on call or something. Maybe switch them to vibrate, because they can be a little disruptive. We are recording this evening's meeting, and the reason we're doing that is so we have a record of the meeting, but also so we can share the details of the meeting on our website, and you can invite, again, friends and family or colleagues to listen to the questions and the answers that were given and take advantage of that. Because we're recording the event, it will mean we'll be asking you in the question and answer session to use a microphone, which I hope will be all right with everyone, but it's very important we hear your questions. We would ask, therefore, because we're recording, that you don't film the proceedings. In my experience, some people in the audience might find that quite uncomfortable. I can't see anyone intending to do that, but just as a mention. And once we've heard from Shane, I will outline how we'll do the question and answers and then launch into that. So I'd like to begin by asking Shane to come up and to give a short presentation about our proposals for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's my pleasure to present the proposal this evening. So the proposal is to develop a Centre for Planned Orthopaedic Surgery based at the Colchester Hospital site. Sometimes we call planned surgery elective surgery, so you may hear that term in the document or during the presentation. The proposal itself is part of a bigger programme of work, which we call Building for Better Care. And that is a nearly £70 million central government investment in the services for our patients. It's split into two sections, really. The first is around urgent and emergency care, and the majority of that will be investment at the Ipswich Hospital site, including a new MRI and CT scanner, a new emergency department and urgent treatment centre, and expansion of the specialty assessment units at both our hospital sites. There's also some minor reconfiguration of the emergency department at Colchester Hospital in that phase. The second part of that investment is the one we're discussing this evening, and that includes two elements that have to be delivered. The first is the orthopaedic elective centre that we're discussing, but a second and important part of that is the need to reprovide day surgery facilities at Colchester Hospital, which are significantly past their sell-by date and need to be replaced. Particularly at Ipswich Hospital, there are a number of other things outside of this programme of work which will be taking place over the next 5 years or so and are in our estate strategy for the next 5 years. So obviously the top two I've spoken about, but we will be redeveloping our breast services and children's units, our dermatology neurophysiology departments, which are currently in the Victorian north end of Ipswich Hospital, again in accommodation which is no longer fit for purpose, and a whole range of other schemes and refurbishments at Ipswich Hospital. So why are we doing this? Well, the main reason is that at the moment we really lack the capacity we need to provide good care in a timely way for all of the patients that need it. So at the moment our cancellation rate at both hospitals is much higher than we would like. In the last year at Ipswich Hospital, for example, 27% of booked operations were cancelled. Not every single one of those patients will have received a letter inviting them, but it still represents capacity that we've lost for one reason or another. The main reason for that is that we have emergency patients occupying the beds that we would use for planned surgery. And that results overall in us doing less inpatient activity over time. So in the last year, we did 24% fewer operations as inpatients in orthopaedics than we did 5 years ago. That's led to increases in our waiting time. So the average waiting time at the moment is 22 weeks compared to a national average of 14 weeks, with some patients waiting over a year for their surgery. And the waiting list in the last 18 months has grown by nearly 50%. So the centre itself would bring much needed capacity in orthopaedics for our population. It would have at least 48 new inpatient beds built to the latest NHS standards. That means that at least half of the rooms will be single ensuite rooms, and the remaining beds would be in four-bedded bays instead of the six beds that we would normally fit into a similar space now. That has several advantages. So it's good for the prevention of cross-infection between patients. It supports the rehabilitation of the patient at the bedside rather than having to take them away to another area to get them to get up and about after their surgery. And it also gives space, if needed, for visiting relatives, potentially to sleep in the same area as the patient, particularly in the ensuite rooms. So the facility would also have initially five brand new operating theatres with space for a sixth over time as that's required. They would be built to the latest ultra-clean standards for the NHS and would represent the finest operating theatres in our whole estate. The centre itself would focus on planned orthopaedic procedures. The common ones that people will recognise are things like hip replacements and knee replacements, but also in some more complex procedures such as revision of previous joint replacements, which are more complex procedures. There are a number of benefits for patients if we do this. Probably the first amongst those is the reduced risk of cancellation, because this is a dedicated facility for planned work that won't accommodate emergency patients in the way that we end up doing at the moment. That will lead to shorter waiting times for surgery, and we expect that a facility like this will continue the trend of the length of time people need to stay in hospital reducing over time. So over the last 20 years or so, it has come down from a week to 10 days to 3 to 4 days. And we expect that trend will continue. We expect that the clinical outcomes will be excellent for people undergoing surgery in these facilities. That is not in any way to suggest that our clinical outcomes at the moment are not excellent. They really are. But we know from evidence from around the world and in UK centres that these facilities provide highly standardised care. Importantly, it will also make space for other improvements of services, particularly on the Ipswich site, where it would allow the expansion of our emergency orthopaedic services in both beds and theatres available for that, which is much needed at the moment. It will be a top quality centre, and we expect that it will attract and retain the best staff to serve our population into the future, and that those staff will be undertaking research and innovating in clinical practice. So why are we proposing Colchester Hospital? Well, there are really three reasons for that. The first is that there, at the Ipswich site, it would be possible to build this facility. However, to do that, we would have to build over an existing facility, either a car park or another building on the Ipswich site. And then we'd have to rebuild whatever we've built over in a different location on the Ipswich site. So that would end up consuming more of the budget without really adding any other value. And unfortunately, when we've done the calculations of the costs of doing that, it is not affordable to build the facility at Ipswich Hospital for those reasons. The second is that we have to re-provide the day surgery facilities at Colchester Hospital, and doing it in that way allows us to utilise some of the existing space in Colchester Hospital to do that, and avoids having to build additional new facilities for day surgery, and that makes this proposal affordable. And then the final issue, which is a little more subtle but is important, is that at the moment there's a fairly even split of number of patients coming to both hospitals for these procedures. There are slightly more from the Colchester end, but it is only slightly different. However, the growth in numbers of residents that we're expecting over the next 20 years is about twice as much around Colchester as it is around Ipswich. And one of the things we have to consider in making this proposal is to make sure that as few people as possible have to travel further for their care. And therefore, again, on that basis, we would select Colchester. So on the Colchester site, the location would be this area in blue. The main hospital block is here and the main entrance here, for those that are familiar with the site. The main northern approach road from the A12 to the centre of Colchester is here. The train station is a little further down here, and the football stadium and the A12 somewhere up here. There is an existing bus stop just here, which is served by the park and ride facility in Colchester, just over the A12. And we hope, with support from our local government partners in Essex, to be able to create a new entrance to the hospital site off the Northern Approach Road, which will allow easy access by road with a small amount of parking, particularly for disabled drivers, right next to the facility. Just before I move off that, I think it's important to say that the location itself is slightly separated from the main hospital block, which helps with that reduction in the temptation to use those beds for emergency patients, but it's close enough in the case of a rare but serious complication that might require support from other kinds of medical services or diagnostic tests. There's a lot of things that wouldn't change. So outpatient care, diagnostic tests, x-rays, scans, blood tests and the like, and preoperative assessment for anaesthetic care would remain at the local hospital, so Ipswich in this case. Ipswich would continue to be the regional centre for spinal surgery. Emergency orthopaedic surgery would stay at Ipswich, and follow-up appointments would continue there as well. And we would expect that the consultant that you are referred to and you see in outpatients will be the same consultant responsible for your surgery at the centre. So the things that would change, we expect, would be the location of the inpatient surgery for 3 to 4 days. But we also think there are a number of changes to the whole pathway of care that we will use this opportunity as a catalyst to explore with our expert consultant colleagues. And we think that overall it's possible to reduce the total number of visits to hospital that patients undergo in their care for their operations and afterwards. So just to illustrate that, at the moment, your GP will refer you to a community assessment process prior to coming to the hospital. But patients can have up to 6 appointments before their surgery in the current way care is provided. That is quite variable between different consultants and between the two hospitals. Obviously, standardisation of the way we do things is important to maintaining the quality of care that we provide. The surgery at the local hospital, as we've said, has long delays for some patients and a high rate of cancellation for operations that are booked into our theatres. That goes up particularly in the winter or at times of emergency pressures. And then there can be a number of follow-ups at the hospital as well, including seeing your consultant team again, but also for rehabilitation. We think it is possible to streamline that process somewhat with the advice of our expert multidisciplinary teams, so that after your community assessment, there is scope for increasing the one-stop assessment pathways that we're able to offer by combining diagnostic tests with your first consultant visit, for combined clinics for more complex patients, particularly those with diabetes, heart disease, and lung disease. You would see still the same consultant team for your surgery, as I've said, but we believe there is scope for increasing the opportunity to have rehabilitation in community settings, such as community hospitals, or even for some patients in their own homes. And that follow-up would become something that you have if you have problems, rather than something you just do routinely. So how many patients would be affected? Well, in the last full year, around 3,400 patients had these sort of procedures in our area, and just under half of those had their procedures at Ipswich Hospital. And they would be the people who would be affected by the change in location to Colchester. We estimate that about 14 patients a day would require surgery at the new facility, of which about half would be having their surgery at a different location than under the current arrangements. And importantly, we know that over the next 20 years, the number of patients needing treatment each year will grow by almost a third, so 1,000 more cases a year in 20 years' time. We recognise that some of our staff will be impacted by this change. The public consultation part of this process comes quite early in the development of the plans. So although we have been engaging with our staff for some time now, there is a lot more detailed planning that needs to be done with our staff to understand exactly what the best working arrangements will be going into the future. And we have a good amount of time in which to do that before the plans are finalised. But that detailed planning really begins after the public consultation. So the consultation is a consultation on just one option. And as I've explained, the reason for that is that having looked at a number of options, we think all of the feasible options, only one of those options is both feasible and affordable. However, we still are really interested in your views. We want to understand from you your views on the proposals, any concerns that you might have, and any ideas that you have for mitigating the challenges that travelling additional distance will present to some patients in changing the site at which they have their surgery. There is additional information available on our website, including assessments of the travel implications and the quality impact, a summary of the business case, and importantly, a report from the Clinical Senate who were very supportive of these proposals, including the selection of Colchester as the likely site. The Clinical Senate is an independent clinical group, and there is one in every region of the country, and they are tasked with reviewing these sort of proposals for significant service change. So that represents quite an important independent clinical view on these proposals. We're holding 11 public meetings, including this one, at the locations you can see there, and there are a number of social media engagements that will take place during the consultation as well. The consultation will close on the 1st of April. There is then the pre-election period for local government elections, in which we're not able to hold any further public meetings. However, once those are concluded on the 8th of May, there will be a stakeholder decision-making session which will be held to consider all of the responses to the consultation and our response to the issues that have been raised. And the people who will make up that session will be representatives of the local community, our Health Watch colleagues from Essex and Suffolk, as well as members of our commissioners and our staff. That stakeholder group will make a recommendation to the CCG governing bodies, who will meet in public in the early summer and make a decision on the outcome of the consultation. And if that is successful, we will then begin the detailed development of the proposals and the business cases, which are then expected to take another 12 months to complete. That means we won't begin building the centre until at least the year 2021, possibly 2022, and we expect the centre would open in 2024. So that, to me, seems quite a long way away. So I'll stop there and hand back to you, Rebecca, for questions.
Thank you very much, Shane. I hope you found that a helpful overview of our proposals, but obviously now is the most important part of the meeting, your opportunity to ask questions and receive answers from the panel. If I could just set out a few simple ways in which we'll hopefully make this work as well as possible. There are lots of you here tonight, and we want to hear all of your voices. In addition to the panel, we do have a couple of other experts in the room. Andrew McLaughlin, if I could just ask him to maybe just indicate who's the project director who I may call on to answer some of the questions, and also our chair Helen Taylor is here as well, and we also have our director of estates and facilities present, who will be able to hopefully deal with any specific questions that you might have about the site, Ipswich or Colchester Hospitals. So I'm very grateful to them all being here. If I could ask you to direct your questions to me, and then we'll go to the panel for the answers. Some of them may give a view. They are experts in particular areas. I may ask one or two to comment, but the aim is to get through as many of your questions and queries as possible. And I'm sure that I don't need to ask any of you this, but please do respect your fellow questioners. But some people may have questions that take a little longer to ask than others, and if you could just give everyone the time and the space to answer those questions, and then respect the responses of the panel as we go through. If you don't have a question but would just like to make a statement, that's absolutely fine. We'll record that and then move on. And often these environments aren't comfortable for everybody, so if you aren't comfortable asking a question in this environment, just indicate to me or Anna or Luke, who are standing behind you, and then we can have the question brought up to me and I'll ask it on your behalf. If you have a question that's more personal or you don't want to ask it in the public session, none of us are running off at the end of the meeting, so we'll all stay behind and be happy to chat to anyone about any issues you have. But the purpose of this public session is a question and answers about our proposals today. If we covered a point, if we feel we need to cover it again, I'll come back to it. But if I think we've already answered it, I will ask us to move on, because we want to get through your questions as fast as possible. So without further ado, I'd like to take our first question. If you could pop your hand up, one of my colleagues will come to you with their microphone. If you'd like to introduce yourself, please do. And if you'd like to say if you represent an organisation, please do, but you don't have to. So do we have our first question? Goodness. I'm sure there must be somebody. Yes, thank you, sir.
Yes, I'm Ron Llewellyn. I'm public governor at Ipswich. I've been approached by many of the members of the hospital about these proposals, and got into the detail quite a bit at various meetings. I'm convinced now that the proposal is the only real alternative, but that draws my attention to transport and the patient going into hospital and the patient coming out of hospital. I wonder whether that aspect, well, I know that aspect will be considered after the consultation period, whatever the consultation period throws up, but will that in itself justify going to consultation again, the detail of transportation arrangements? So for two reasons, really. One is that it will be difficult if all the transport arrangements are based on the circumstances of the patient. It would be perhaps happier to understand that whatever transport facilities are provided for everybody. And the second point is the question of travelling in an ambulance, and if the patient is returning to Ipswich in an ambulance, I know from my experience in the past that ambulances are the most uncomfortable things to ride in, and if they'd had surgery, could that be considered, please? Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a really important question, and as you would imagine, the most important question that we've already been asked in the 3 weeks that this consultation has been running. So I'd like to ask Shane Gordon if he could begin by answering that question.
I think there's a couple of points in responding to that. We could have put our ideas down in the consultation document and said, this is what we think we're going to do. But we didn't want to jump to conclusions on what the right answer is for transport for patients. We wanted to fully understand what our public and our patients think are the issues, and then be able to take those into consideration in making a response to those. The second is that it's not just the hospitals that are involved in solving transport issues for patients. So obviously there is a role for local government in both road and public transport access. Our Joint Health Overview and Scrutiny Committee have formed a working group that we are part of to look at transport issues. It also involves our commissioners in the patient transport services that are commissioned, and it involves the voluntary and community service sector as well in the community transport services that are available. And I suspect the answer isn't one or other of those approaches. It's probably a range of different approaches which are required to minimise the difficulties in getting to and from the centre. I think we also recognise in that conversation that for some of our service users and patients who live in the more rural areas, particularly in Suffolk, access by public transport isn't possible to some of our services now, and that's the same for some areas in North East Essex as well. So I think there is a bigger question about getting to and from our services in the round than just in relation to this centre, and that's part of the discussion that we've already begun having with our local government and commissioning and voluntary sector partners. We have also asked the Health Watch organisations in Suffolk and Essex to help us survey some of our current patients to better understand the challenges that they face in accessing our services, and that will inform our response after the consultation.
I'd like to ask Mark Loughler to make a comment, please, and then I'll invite Dr. Shenton to add something about commissioning. Thank you.
Thanks. Just in answer to your point about the ambulance. Now, if we were transporting you back home in an ambulance, there'd be something seriously wrong with our surgery. I think that was happening on a regular basis. What we're talking about are mainly hip and knee replacements. Now, about the average stay in the trust is about 4 days for a hip or knee replacement. And when you go home, you should be able to walk up and down stairs. I know the physios will get you up, and you should certainly be able to get in a normal car. And most patients who have hip or knee replacements go home with a relative, you know, driven home in a normal car. And we wouldn't really be sending you home until you could get into one. So ambulances, I hope, won't be involved very often.
Thank you. Mark, would you like to add something about provision of patient transport across North Essex and Ipswich and East Suffolk?
So that is an area that that we do commission, though it is not based on a universal access. There are levels at which that is commissioned for, as you probably know, and probably that's where your question came from. And you know how we manage transport humanely, as you relate to with the use of ambulance, is going to be important. I suppose we've got seven a day each way is the sort of starting point that that we're talking about in numbers. And I would be very interested to sort of see what the next steps is, particularly from the councils and us starting to think out of the box in terms of community-based transport, you know, the assisted way that people can get to and from hospital in cars, as where the next steps are, because we know that transport and parking are some of the biggest areas of complaint, and we've seen, you know, nationally, should hospitals charge for parking, and what do we do with the money that they won't get from a consequence of that, and what is it that we would really favour as a community in terms of being able to get good access to and from.
Thank you. And I'd like to ask Crawford to contribute, please.
And I'd completely agree with the points everybody else on the panel has made, but I think it's important for us to reflect that at the moment, 27% of our operations are cancelled, which is clearly wholly unacceptable. So four or five patients every day are making transport arrangements, their relatives may be taking time off work, and those plans don't work because we cancel their operations. So moving towards a new scheme whereby we do operations on the day that we have planned it will in itself be helpful for those making adjustments to the rest of their lives. I think it's important we don't lose sight of that, but we absolutely need to get all these other points absolutely right, both according to your point universally, but also for each individual and their relatives.
Thank you. So would you like to ask a further question before I move on? So I'm just going to pass you the microphone. Thank you.
Yes, I accept the point about the type of surgery and understand that situation. But nevertheless, the ordeal for someone going to Colchester for the operation, they're making their own way there. They're not particularly mobile. They have difficulty walking, and for the reasons that are obvious. It might be that a bay could be set aside at the hospital for their cars to come into, rather than have to do battle with the parking arrangements. Thank you. Thank you for the answers.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Pryke.
Hi there, I'm Stephen Pryke. I'm one of the orthopaedic consultants at Ipswich Hospital. Can I just start asking about the cancellation rate that you've just told us about? A cancellation rate of 27% is near enough a third. And as someone who does hip and knee replacements at Ipswich, if I was cancelling a third of my operations, I'd only be doing two operations a day, which is far less than I'm actually seeing at the coalface. So by cancellations, do you mean rearrangements of surgery to different days, or do you mean on the day or the day before cancellations?
Thank you. Shane?
Yes, so I think as I said in my presentation, that figure includes all the patients who are booked onto the theatre system. Not all of those will have received a date through the post.
So those aren't really cancellations, those are rearrangements, aren't they?
Yes, but they represent capacity that is planned that has to be rebooked. and the impact of that is reflected in the steadily declining amount of inpatient activity that we're doing across both hospitals, actually, not just at Ipswich.
And does that decline in inpatient operations, is that because the numbers are actually decreasing or because there are more cases that are being done as day cases, so don't require overnight stays?
So I think there's an element of both, but the number of patients needing inpatient care appears to be increasing because the waiting list is extending at the same time. So I think there is a definite reduction in the amount of operations for those people who need them.
Okay, can I ask another question about transport? And we've talked about people being moved in ambulances. And one of my concerns about moving elective surgery and complex elective surgery to Colchester Hospital from Ipswich is that Ipswich will rapidly lose the skills it has currently to enable it to do complex trauma surgery for both hip and knee replacement patients. So the natural consequence of that is if the theatre staff are moved down to Colchester who have that special expertise, rapidly the hospital will not be able to provide those services at Ipswich. So the consequence of that could be for our very frail elderly patients with complex fractures that they will need to be moved by road to Colchester because we do not have the facilities to look after those patients safely at Ipswich as Ipswich becomes downgraded. What are your thoughts about moving those patients?
I'm going to start with Mark, if I may. Thank you.
Okay, Steve, what I'd say to you is that what you're talking about are the frail elderly patients that are increasing numbers who've got complex fractures around joint replacements. That's what you're talking about. Now, those patients need to be operated on by surgeons who do surgeons that do revision surgery, right, that are competent to do complex surgery. So when these patients come in Ipswich and Colchester, we wait until someone like you or me can operate on, because it's the surgeon that has the experience that you need to operate on those patients. Now, if you have a joint elective orthopaedic unit, you've got the critical mass needed to do this sort of complex revision surgery. So you will have surgeons in ESNEFT that are capable of dealing with these periprosthetic fractures. Now, I don't think for a minute that these patients are going to be shifted from Ipswich to Colchester, because that's quite, these are frail patients who've got unstable fractures. And, you know, as a doctor, I certainly wouldn't want to move them 20 miles down the road. So the person I would transport to that patient is the surgeon who is capable of dealing with it. Now, if we look at it the other way, and we don't build an elective centre that concentrates expertise, as you know, the first thing that will happen is we will lose our ability to do revision surgery, because the direction of travel is that small centres with small numbers don't get to do it. So then those patients are going to be stuck in Ipswich and Colchester hospitals with fractures, and would have to be transported to Norwich or Cambridge or wherever the revision hub is to have their surgery. So I do not envisage those patients being moved to the elective orthopaedic centre, but I envisage those fractures being treated by revision-trained surgeons who are in ESNEFT.
Mark, may I ask you to explain for those individuals in the audience who aren't expert exactly what a revision is, please?
So a revision is a redo operation. When a joint replacement fails, we hope they fail seldom, but when they do, it's a more complex operation to redo them. You need specialised equipment, and not every hip and knee surgeon does revisions. There are people like Steve and myself that maybe do more than others. But there is a national investigation on this, looking at numbers of patients. So we are going to be required to do a certain number of revisions before we do any. So having a joint elective unit where we have large numbers of patients and will be able to do large numbers of revisions allows us to specialise in that field.
Thank you. I do have another question in the audience, but I'm just going to see if there's any other additions to Mr. Pryke's question from the panel. No? Okay. Does that answer, Steve, everything?
Not entirely. So I agree, Mark, exactly what you said about the surgical expertise from the surgeon. But my issues were more with regard to the wider multiple disciplinary team looking after that patient. So I can be the best revision surgeon in the world. If I have a inexperienced scrub nurse who's providing assistance on that day, or someone who's not familiar with the instruments, who doesn't use them all the time, outcome from surgery is likely to be poorer because the surgery will take longer. The stress of the surgery for both the surgeon and everyone else in that operating theatre will be high. So that's what I mean about being de-skilling the staff at Ipswich, because they just won't be undertaking that complex surgery because they're not doing the routine surgery at all, and they will just be expected to undertake the most complex operations on the most frail patients. So I think I totally agree with what you say, it should carry on in Ipswich, but I think what's likely to happen is it just won't be able to because it won't be safe to do it.
So I'm just going to thank you for that question. So Mr. Pryke's talking about the wider theatre team who work in our theatres every day, alongside ourselves, and some of whom are pictured in this photograph. Mark, could you comment, please?
Well, I'd simply say, Steve, that that's not going to happen on my watch anyway. These are complex operations, and they need a good team, they need the right equipment, they need the right surgeons. And that's for you and me and Tim and anyone else to discuss how we manage it. But these patients, the periprosthetic fractures, are an increasing burden. They're a very difficult group of patients. They're only going to increase, and that's all across the country. And it's up to us. We are running the department to make sure that these patients have an excellent service. I'm sure they will.
Thank you. I'm not going to not come back to you, but I'm just going to move on, if I may. Gentleman in the check shirt, please.
Good evening. My name's Stuart. I have nothing to do with the health service. I'm just an independent, interested person. I work in horticulture, so I couldn't be further from the trip from here. What I do have is, unfortunately, a detailed knowledge now of the NHS and how it works, because my mother is 91, my dad died at 89, and I have had so many trips in and out of GPs and hospitals, unimaginable. So I've built up quite a knowledge. That's my background. I just want to pick up something that Mark just talked about, which was revisions, and it's something that is picked up, because I have to sort of search out a bit and get my information, but it comes from reading and listening to the radio, but a national survey was publicised last year, and you'll be aware of this. So the hospitals with the lowest proportion of hip replacement surgery which needed revision, and you'll know the answer, one of those seven top hospitals was Ipswich. So as a layman who works in horticulture with a 91-year-old woman, mother, I'd be quite happy for her to go to Ipswich, probably because, well, definitely, it's going to be excellent surgery, as my father has had, and other things, other members of family and friends. But if, anything goes wrong, I know there's the backup, ITU, everything is on site, the expertise, as the gentleman here has said, the experience is there on site. My worry is that there's another reason I don't understand, but why from an outside why would you discount the hospitals? It's currently one of the best seven hospitals which has the lowest proportion of hip replacement surgery needing revision be discarded and actually cast it aside and put resources somewhere else. That to me as an outsider seems absurd. Another fact would be surely, and one of the slides was talking about the increase in population, and we all know there's an increase in population. There's a lot of guesses and ambitions on those slides, and you can't put facts, but one of them was talking about population growth. Well, clearly population growth is to carry on in Ipswich. the estimate was something much higher. But these are just guesses. Ipswich will increase. Colchester will increase, yes. But you've also got to look at life expectancy. So therefore, Ipswich demands its own specialist centre. Colchester demands its own specialist centre. Forget the issues of transport. That shouldn't even be an equation. That's 5th, 6th, 7th, 27th on the list. So you've got to look at it from the patient's point of view. And the first question we're talking about transport. My interest, how do I get members of the family to the in and out of the hospital? That's my experience, how time-consuming that is. Shane, on one of your slides you were talking about the new centre at Colchester Woods, new park and ride and things like that. Oh, come on, pie in the sky. My mum's 91. Are you expecting her to use a park and ride? The reality is 91-year-olds don't use park and rides unless you've got to build a special A&E unit on the A12 because the crashes that will occur trying to get into the place. You know, the reality is people who are elderly have these hip and knee operations. Their likely partner is going to be the same age. Okay, yes, it's 25-year-olds that might be having it, but you know that's rare. The average age of these patients going in are elderly. Therefore, their family partners are elderly, or their friends that take them are equally elderly. And that's the reality we're dealing with across the country, not alone in Ipswich and Colchester. So talking about the transport, talking about a park and ride and plans to work with the council, well, the councils have strapped for cash anyway, so I can't see how they're going to start putting in new facilities for someone coming from Ipswich. So I've rambled a bit. This whole survey, are we discounting the fact that Ipswich currently is one of the best places of seven in the whole of the country, has the lowest proportion of hip surgeries that need revision? Are we just discounting that?
Thank you, Stuart. I think you've made four very important points there in terms of questions. If I could pull them out and help our panel answer them, let's start with that. So we've gotten a question about demographic growth, which I will ask Shane to talk about how our population is growing and how we did those calculations, because they're actually more scientific than you might think. So I'll ask Shane to tackle that. We've got an issue about transport again, which I will ask Crawford to comment on, but I might ask Paul Fenton, our expert in the audience, to talk about that, and particularly picking up on the issue of funding from our councils around that, which we may be able to provide you with some more positive comment on. But importantly, starting with the issue of the rating of Ipswich Hospital at the moment in the top seven, as you rightly point out, and there has been some information about that in the media, and I think it's really important to explain to everyone how the staff who work currently at Ipswich will work potentially in the new centre, subject to the consultation. So I'd like to start with Mark in response to that particularly.
Okay, thanks for that question. I'm conscious that we've got to finish by 8, so I'll be fairly brief. But unfortunately, you've asked it to someone who's written several scientific papers on performance monitoring, revision rates, and so on. So you'll have to excuse me. But you're absolutely right. Ipswich, the revision rate in Ipswich is extremely low, one of the best seven hospitals for low revision rates in the country. So, you know, by that measure and other measures, actually, it is excellent performance. You are right. Now, one of the papers I've written shows that the variation in performance is, as you might expect, not due to the hospital so much as due to the surgeon. So just like if you take a very good piano player, put them in Snape Maltings, they don't become a bad piano player when you put them in the Albert Hall. Same is with surgeons. So looking at revision rates, it's very much related to the individual surgeon. And revision, redo, which is the measure you're talking about, is something that is a long-term measure. So it takes often years and years before joint replacements need to be redone. So, you know, that measure is dependent on the surgery that's happened some years ago. And some of the surgeons that are no longer working. So, for instance, in Ipswich, there's very high performing hip replacement surgeon who's retired, but that would contribute to their figures. And in Colchester, there's a surgeon who's got a high rate of revision, who's no longer working, but that contributes to our figures. But, you know, that being said, for hip replacement and knee replacement, Ipswich is an excellent place, you're right. And what we're intending to do is take those excellent surgeons and move them 20 miles down the road and operate on those patients. No. They're going to be there. They're going to be training juniors. And, both. They're not going to be absent from Ipswich. Well, okay, there are how many orthopaedic surgeons in Ipswich? Generally. Okay, seven. So what we're envisaging is that those seven surgeons would spend one and a half days per week on average. Now, how they organise that is up to us. On average in Colchester, but the rest of the time, they're in Ipswich. So it's not as if there's not going to be orthopaedic surgeons in Ipswich. There most certainly is.
Okay, so I'm going to ask Crawford if he'd like to add any more to that, and then I'm going to move on to the demography.
So I'm just going to pick up the transport issue, and I think you're absolutely right. We're not expecting patients who are elderly and frail after an operation to be using a park and ride. The reason the park and ride matters is that the whole face of transport is changing profoundly. So we're looking at this unit opening in 2024. In 2025, you won't be able to buy a petrol or diesel car in this country. So we're looking at a very different face of transport. And as a trust and as a responsible major employer, we're thinking for our staff as well about our carbon footprint. So there's going to be some really hard thinking to do about how we all get to work and how we do things differently. The park and ride can free capacity within the hospital for our patients more than our staff in many ways. I would like to see our elective orthopaedic patients getting exactly the right transport for their needs, however frail and however impaired their walking might be. It's about what people need, but thinking really differently. And in these next few years, there's a lot of thought to do about that. But I think it's worth reflecting on that in a very changing environment of our thoughts about transportation.
Can I ask the microphone to go to Paul Fenton, please, our Director of Estates and Facilities, while we're on transport, and ask Paul if he could just comment on the issue raised, Stuart, about is there actually any money to build an extra exit into Colchester Hospital and what we're doing on that site to hopefully reassure you. Thank you, Paul.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. I'm responsible for car parking and indeed the ESNEFT travel plan. Currently, we have travel plans for both individual sites, and we're currently working on the combined travel plan. We're looking at the access off the Northern Approach Road at Colchester, and we're doing that jointly with the Colchester Borough Council and with Essex County Council Highways. There is an appetite with Essex County Council Highways to indeed fund some of those changes off the Northern Approach Road to give us the ability to access the site in a much better manner than we currently do with Turner Road at the moment, which, for those of you who know Colchester, occasionally gets gridlocked, and we have difficulties in getting in and out of the site. So we're having that conversation anyway. We need to. We especially need to do if we are going to put the elective care centre there. There is a number of advantages, however, in its location, as Shane and Crawford has said, with regards to the park and ride and freeing up availability of vehicle parking spaces on site. You will see from the diagram that Shane showed in the presentation where it's located, gives us easy access, and we are considering a number of potential items of detail at this moment in time with regards to car parking for those patients coming to the elective care centre directly outside the building. Potentially free of charge. We've looked at taxi transport, we've looked at public transport, we've looked at bus transport to and from each of the hospital sites. We're in discussions with both of the bus users at both Colchester and Ipswich with regards to direct links, and we're looking at both operators of the park and ride. All of that is a degree of detail which will need to be worked through as we work through this process and we get to the eventual business case for approval. It is absolutely at the top of our agenda. It is an emotive subject. Car parking certainly is. I can vouch for that. But we are looking at all items of those details. And events like this gives us the opportunity to take on board those concerns. And I'm more than happy to meet with any members of the public afterwards at this or any other event to discuss it in more detail, because like my fellow colleagues on the panel, I can talk for England with regards to car parking and some of the travel issues that we know that we face, because it is a very emotive subject. It's a very important one as well.
Yes, of course.
By all means.
Can I just give you the microphone? Thank you.
It's just so briefly, just come back to a future question on car parking. So I'm sort of looking into the future, and one of the gentlemen just mentioned about something that was on my mind. The future of cars and transport will change, and it is changing so radically. So currently at Ipswich, I've always thought it a real puzzle as to why we have vast, flat spaces as a car park and not a small footprint with a very tall multi-storey, which takes up far less space. One of my questions about car parking, at Ipswich, and one of the slides is, there is no space at Ipswich. Well, I'm sorry, you know, I drive past Heath Road and all I see is car park. You go around the back of the hospital, all you'll see is car park. There is vast, vast space. If you go into modern town centres, they don't have vast, flat ones. They have big, tall, slim ones, or some older ones go down. So has that been investigated to free up space and money? But anyway, vastly around the country, staff travel to and from by car. What about a question about staff, free transport for public, for the staff, do away with 50% of the car park, build a new hip centre on the car park, have a shuttle bus running all round, say it's free for staff. How many staff do you think will ditch their cars and go by the free shuttle?
Stuart, I'm going to take that as a comment, if you don't mind, and I know Paul will be happy to speak to you in a little bit more detail at the end. I've got a couple of questions in the audience, but I'm just going to come to the final part of your earlier question, which was about demography and about population growth in Ipswich and Colchester, because I think that's a really important point, and I'd like to ask Shane to take that.
So you are absolutely right that predicting population growth is a difficult art, and there is no perfect way to do it. However, we use the Office of National Statistics estimates, which are nationally and in the NHS recognised to be the gold standard estimates for the growth of the population. Now, in aggregate, in the next 20 years, the Office of National Statistics estimates the growth of the population in Ipswich and East Suffolk to be somewhere, depending on the particular part of Suffolk, between 7 and 9%. In North East Essex, it's nearer to 19% over the same period. We've not rested there, though. We have looked at the growth that's predicted in each age band, and we have mapped that against the level of orthopaedic surgical activity required for that age band to give quite a sophisticated model showing how the growth in the population affects the growth in demand for these types of surgery. And that's particularly because we recognise that the population in Suffolk is on average somewhat older than the population in North East Essex, but it's not actually that much older when you look at the data. But nevertheless, we've looked at it from that perspective, and it still translates to a significantly higher level of growth in need for orthopaedic surgery around Colchester in the next 20 years, despite the fact that the population in Suffolk is slightly older. It's just the fact that the population around Colchester is going to grow approximately twice the rate.
Thank you to everyone for your answers to Stuart's questions. I'm going to ask Tim Brammer for a comment or question. Consultant orthopaedic surgeon at Ipswich Hospital.
Hi, yes, I'm Tim Brammer. I've been an arthroplasty surgeon at Ipswich since 2005, so I've been involved in the unit. And the first thing is I'm glad you brought up the Ipswich results. You're right, they are in the top seven of 430 arthroplasty hospitals in the country, and that quality has been ignored. Not only was it ignored, but when we have good news at the hospital, it's usually published in the local papers. But on this account, even though I spoke to the press office, nothing was published in the local papers nor anywhere else about the fantastic results, which was a little disappointing. I didn't ask the question. I knew it would never take place, but I gave it my best shot. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second thing we need to talk about is, you mentioned, has anyone explored, and this is the elephant in the room, has anyone explored expanding on Ipswich and Colchester sites with existing space and how much that would cost? And I can tell you the answer to that. The answer to that is no. The reason that no one's explored it is the money was initially available for a new build. Okay, so you had to build a shiny new something or other and deliver services in a different way, and if you did, you got the money. So, no, you know, great for the Trust Board. They applied for that money. They had a plan. They got the money. Fantastic. That was a different government and a different parliament. Okay, so has it ever been explored expanding on two different sites? In other words, building a couple of laminar flows and swinging 12 beds on the Martlesham area and doing the same on Colchester? No one's ever explored it. Could you do that more cheaply than you could build a shiny new build in Colchester? Yes, you could. So the question is, you know, in terms of arthroplasty and outcomes and everything else, as we've seen today on that fantastic slide, there is good evidence that big units produce better results. There's no evidence for that at all. No evidence. We've been benchmarked against a place called Swellyock. I've looked at their PROMS reports, patient-reported outcome measures, significantly worse than either of the two centres that we're talking about. No evidence at all. Peterborough are on two sites. They went onto one site because it was deemed unsafe and dangerous. Okay, so that's the next thing to say. If I was in Colchester and they were building me a new unit, I would categorically rub my hands and say, bring it on, because I'd have a new unit, and if it didn't work, I'd have the old unit, it'd be great. But I'm not in Colchester as a patient when I retire. So for the people of Suffolk, does this look like a good thing? Okay, and I would say to you, if they were building a phenomenal unit with 9 new laminar flows and we knew it could be fully tooled up, it might be quite a good thing. But we're now down to at least 6 new laminar flows. So you know when you go to the sales, at least 6 means 5, okay? How many laminar flows do you think we've got on site at Colchester and Ipswich now? Let me do the maths. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So no expansion in laminar flows unless you retain the old laminar flows. At the moment, our laminar flows are going to have breast surgery and vascular surgery in a dip switch. That's the provisional plan. We're not retaining them, so you might retain a couple of the old ones at Colchester. Well, there's the people of Colchester well served, and the people of Suffolk struggling a little bit. Okay. So if I was from Suffolk and I was looking at these plans, I would want to ask, could you use this money in a better way to expand on both sites and allow both Colchester and Ipswich to do existing expansion for a fraction of the money? Say you gave us 10 million at Ipswich instead of the 21 million, that's half of the 42 million elective budget. We could build 2 new laminar flows, we could swing a wall and get 12 extra beds, we could give another 10 million to the medics to mop up their difficulties and not breach the beds, and you could hand 1 million back to the Department of Health and say, look how good we are at Ipswich, look what we've done. No one's explored that at all. Okay, that's really important.
Okay.
It's a clean air theatre. So yes. So mainly those are my points, and I know we'll argue a little bit about them. But I think it's really important for the people of Suffolk to know, yes, we've got a waiting list problem. We predicted it 5 years ago when the Nuffield Hospital stopped doing our extra joint replacements. We've told them over years that this is going to be the case, and we appreciate this case. We want some investment. I'm not saying don't take this money. I'm asking that the people of Suffolk and that the Trust Board and everyone involved in it go back to the Department of Health and the CCGs and say, look, give us 21 million on each site, allow us to expand on each site to a level that allows us to deal with our waiting lists in terms of people, and the people of Suffolk will not be disadvantaged, and they will not have to do long travels, which is not green, however you dress it up. And not only that, you can maintain your really good outcomes. That's all I'm asking. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Some really important points there. First of all, as Director of Communications, I'm really sorry if we didn't get the communications out. I take full responsibility for that, and we'll have a chat afterwards about it. But I think I'd like to just be clear. Is everyone clear what a laminar flow theatre is? Because I'll just ask Mark to explain it, because it is an important point when it comes to orthopaedics and reduced infections in new joints. So if you could just explain that, and then I'll come to Shane to talk about the two-site option.
Laminar flow theatre is a operating theatre that we generally use for implant surgery. So it's got a high efficiency particle filter built into the roof. And there are current numbers are 3 in Colchester and there are 2 in Ipswich. And the new centre would build 5 or 6 more laminar flow theatres. So going from 5 laminar flow theatres to 10 laminar flow theatres is doubling the number of laminar flow theatres. Now, the existing laminar flow theatres that we have can be used for trauma implant surgery. So at both Ipswich and Colchester at the moment, the trauma surgery does not have laminar flow theatres. Now, this sort of one of the benefits of this reorganisation is that then we can use our trauma operating into laminar flow theatres at both sites, which is generally what is recommended.
Mark, could I ask you to take on Tim's second and really important point about the outcomes at other similar elective care centres for orthopaedics, like the Swelliox Centre that Tim referred to, please?
This is a general way of travel that the NHS is going, and it's concentrating resources, and it's, you know, to an extent about making processes more efficient. The evidence for big centres doing better is you are right. You know, there's not a huge amount of it. There's certainly no evidence that makes outcomes worse, but there is evidence in general surgery that concentrating resources and increasing numbers in big centres improves outcome. And in general, high volume centres, which at the moment both of our centres are relatively high volume compared to US standards, do have better outcomes. Now, if you're looking, so I think for our high volume stuff like joint replacement, there isn't good evidence to think that outcomes are going to improve, because outcomes are, as you say, excellent anyway. I think where there will be big knock-on effects is the complex and revision stuff, because then you've got a big concentration of expertise and the numbers to get people experienced, the people that want to do that sort of surgery, to get people experienced in revision and complex surgery. And I think, the quality is more likely to improve in that area than in the high volume stuff, but quality is good anyway. Hope that answers your point.
Thank you. Can I ask Shane to respond to the point about how the money was allocated to Ipswich, East Suffolk and North East Essex? And it's obviously a lot of money in the millions, and why the two central option wasn't explored, please.
So the answer to that goes back to 2015 with a document called the NHS Forward View, which is the national strategy for the health service. And that was very specific about the need to develop more large, high-volume centres for elective procedures across a range of specialties for two reasons. One, that there is evidence in the specialties, as Mark has said, that doing more of a particular procedure makes you better at doing it. So there is some evidence that supports that. But secondly, that our workforce is changing in its shape, and it is simply becoming more difficult to sustain lots and lots of small centres. When you concentrate the expertise in larger centres, it is easier to sustain workforce and training and research all at the same time. So that's the reason there is a national policy. Our integrated care system, of which Mark Shenton is one of the senior representatives around the table, and covers the whole of Suffolk and North East Essex, took that policy direction on board in a local STP plan in 2016, which very clearly set out the requirement for Colchester and Ipswich to work more closely together and to develop consolidation of some of our services where that would be helpful. The money was bid for on that basis. There was a review undertaken in the STP, as it was then for Suffolk and North East Essex, which looked at the sustainability of all of our clinical services in great detail, supported by expert surgeons and physicians, public health specialists, commissioners, senior managers in the NHS, and patients. And that review identified emergency services and orthopaedic surgery as the two areas that most desperately needed transformation to be able to continue providing excellent quality to the level that we need for our population as it grows and changes. And I've already shown earlier the impact that has happened since 2016 in terms of the lengthening waiting lists and the lengthening amount of time that patients have to wait to get their surgery. But the reason we bid for the money for emergency care and for elective care was those are the two areas of our services that are most under pressure. The reason that it was concentrated into a single centre for orthopaedics was there is strong national guidance that that is the right direction of travel for orthopaedic services. And as Mark has said earlier, it looks very likely that some smaller orthopaedic centres will be asked to stop undertaking some types of procedure because they simply don't do enough of them to be safe and delivering high quality. So we want to continue to provide those services locally, but the only way we'll do that is with a single large centre. So that was why the bid was put in that way. Have we considered in detail a two-site option? Not at this stage, because that was not what we were asked to do by our integrated care system, our STP. However, in response to the conversation that you had for some time with our chief executive earlier last week, I think both of you were present, or at least Tim, you were present at that, sorry, it was one of the other surgeons as well. We are now going to work up the cost of doing that in detail. But just to give you a benchmark as to what that might cost, the sort of changes you're describing are similar in scale to the changes that we're making with the emergency department and urgent treatment centre at Ipswich Hospital. That alone costs £35 million. So I think your supposition, without any calculation, that it would be affordable to do that on both sites, we will look into in detail, but on the basis of the costings that we've done in great detail for the other options, I don't think it will be affordable, but we will test that out and answer your question during the consultation.
Thank you. I've got four people asking questions now. So you, sir, had a question. Do you still want to ask that? Sorry, sir. I was just talking about this gentleman in the front. I'll come to you next. Thank you.
Dick Newhouse. I live in Woodbridge and am concerned from the whole of Suffolk area as much as anything. And I think what I've heard tonight, there hasn't been much forward thinking. I can see our very best specialist surgeons stuck in a traffic jam at the Toys R Us roundabout instead of being where we want them to be. I don't know whether Colchester's got a helipad. Has anybody considered having a helicopter link between the two? I haven't heard of anything going forward.
I think our chief executive would love that.
No.
Well, is he the only one? Because I'd love any relation or friend of mine to know that they were going to get the operation on the day, at the time, by the best person.
So I think we were asked this question, a very similar question actually, in Woodbridge earlier this morning at another meeting. And I'm going to ask Crawford if he could answer that, because it not just for our surgeons or any other of our staff that might be moving between the sites, it could sometimes potentially affect patients who are travelling from Suffolk over to Colchester. So I'll ask Crawford if he could respond to
that. So I think your point is well made, and no health professional or indeed any employee wants to spend their working day stuck in that classic traffic jam at the Copdock roundabout. So we wouldn't be scheduling our surgeons to be commuting from one site to another. It's a waste of taxpayers' money to be doing so, and we would expect them to be working whole days on one site or the other. So I work on the two sites, but I don't deliver clinical care on the two sites in one day, because to do so would just not be efficient. So we need to start the day where we're planning to work. There are transport challenges, but compared to those faced in some inner-city hospitals, they are significant, but not as bad. Having been a Londoner for most of my life, I'm used to traffic that takes more forward planning than this. So we're responsive to that, but none of you want to be paying your taxpayers' money to employ somebody who's stuck in the traffic jam, and I think that point is absolutely correct.
Thank you. I'd like to go to the gentleman in the blue shirt at the back now, please, Anna. Thank you, sir.
As a member of the public, there seems to be quite a few specialists and various other bodies in the room, but as a person who grew up and lived his life in Ipswich, a number of points come out of this meeting and out of this conversation. One, the chief executive can't be bothered to turn up to see one of his major areas consultations. That's very disappointing. The man who promised that nothing would leave Ipswich when the merger was first proposed. The man's not here. That's a disappointment. And I think it speaks volumes for his regard and the senior management's regard for the Ipswich Hospital and the Ipswich site. Just as a member of the public, as a person who deals with multi-site international company, where the heart is where all the work's done and where all the specialists go. Secondly, when we talk about transport, again, as a member of the public who has been in a lovely afternoon's dinner party on a Sunday and had a colleague or a friend who's had to leave because the Ipswich site has phoned someone to tell them at 7 o'clock on a Sunday that they have an 80-year-old who needs to be discharged and will be discharged in the next hour out of the door, and they have nowhere to live, nowhere to go, that social services have got to pick up the problem at that time on a Sunday, and that happens on quite a regular basis from Ipswich and Colchester, from my understanding. I know we're talking about elective surgery, but that's a concern when it comes to transport, is that we are talking about issues where people have traditionally been, to be perfectly blunt, thrown out of Ipswich Hospital at all hours, including me picking my mother up at 10 o'clock at night from coming from having a stroke. That's how it is. Thirdly, looking down my list of questions, the question I have for you, wonderful slide telling me what I'm going to keep. We've already got, as far as I understand it, a CT scanner and all the other equipment. As far as I understand it, there was a lot of money spent on A&E care at Ipswich, a brand new centre built on the site in the near past. So are we saying that that was a complete and utter disaster? That's the next question, because we have spent millions on it. The Garrett Centre and all that work that was done there, from what you're telling me, that's incapable of coping and was thus planned incorrectly for even moderate growth over a 10-year period. How you then extrapolate those figures into your figures and say, well, this time, don't worry, we've got it right. It's already gone wrong once. Thirdly, as a resident of Ipswich, can you guarantee me that no other elected surgeries and or specialisms are leaving Ipswich? Because so far in my lifetime, we have lost an awful lot from Ipswich. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think serious cancers and head cancers has been lost. We have people going up the A14 to Cambridge to have heart attacks. Yeah, this is an ongoing trend where you say one centre, large centre, that's the future. Well, that would appear to be Colchester. And if I was looking for a career in the NHS as a surgeon or a consultant, I wouldn't be looking to come to Ipswich. I would look at that list and go, well, we know where the chief exec wants things. We know where everything's going. There's no point being in the backwater in Ipswich because you're not going to get anything. If you ask for something, you're not going to get it because they're not building it there. My final question for the Ipswich site is, what are you going to do in the future? If you're saying that the site is such a mess that you cannot build anything new there because it's going to cost you too much and that Colchester is cheaper, then that applies to every centre you now redevelop. So are we saying in the next 20 to 25 years that the Ipswich is going to continually be downgraded? And finally, on the issue of transport, Ipswich has a park and ride connection. Ipswich, I know as a resident how to get there quickly. Colchester, I'm sorry, the A134 and that roundabout is a complete and utter disaster. You will have a lot of patients who will not turn up on time for elective surgeries in the morning because they'll come from rural Suffolk or Ipswich, will not know how to get to the site quickly, and they'll just sit on the roundabout looking at the B&Q at their football stadium and at McDonald's, because it queues from there and is solid every morning.
Thank you, sir.
And final point, can someone please tell me how an 81-year-old can get on a train and walk up that hill to the site if you're talking about public transport?
Thank you, sir. Some really important points. I'm conscious that we've got a number of other questions in the audience, and if you have indicated you want to ask a question to me, I will come to you. I'm going to direct them in different directions, if I may. With regard to Nick Hume, our Chief Exec's presence at the meetings, he is coming to 4 out of the 11 meetings. He was at a late meeting in Eye last night, and he is going to other meetings. He's not been able to be with us tonight, but he is also...
there's 150,000 people live in Ipswich. Yes. There is a push, 15,000, 20,000 in Woodbridge. There's about 5,000.
So, yes.
If he could actually be bothered to turn up in Ipswich, I know he doesn't like the place, but come on.
Well, to be fair also, he will be, if you'd like to speak to him and direct any questions to him, he will be at both the Joint Health Overview and Scrutiny Committees. The first one of those is on the 18th of March, and there will be a public session in that. So if you'd like to direct questions to him, please do feel free to do so. I'll tell you at the end. It'll be at County Hall in Dever House in the afternoon, I believe. So thank you for that point. Yes, well, yeah, we all do. So I'll just tackle that one. Now, I think the first point you made, which I think is a really important issue about discharges of patients late in the day from hospital. Can I ask Crawford to just briefly address that, please?
So I think you've uncovered part of the reason that we're discussing the elective care centre, which is the pressure on our emergency services. So every hospital, as we very well know, under winter periods, but indeed at many other periods of the year, is under extreme pressure. The most important thing we as doctors, nurses and allied health professionals can do is look after those patients who need our emergency care, to continue that care and to discharge them safely with the right planning into the community. I'm very happy on a personal level to pick up on the experiences you describe, because I absolutely get it that those last minute decisions are not what any of us would want for ourselves or our relatives. So I'm very happy to talk about that after the event or at any other time. But I think what you describe is, I'm not in any way defending that practice and would want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. But the pressure we're on to get things right for emergencies is sometimes extreme. We don't always meet the 4-hour target on our emergency departments. Many hospitals don't, but we should do, because it's a good target. And the pressure we get on the bed state because of those large number of emergencies admissions is exactly the cause for some of the cancellations or deferrals of operations. So this is all part of the work we're doing with the integrated care system, because it's a system challenge, not just a hospital challenge. But your experience is one reflection of the fact that sometimes we're not getting that right. And the aftermath of that, of course, is not only for the emergency patients, but for the person whose hip replacement has been booked who doesn't have it the next morning because of the pressures. This is a part of the solution to that, but it's by no means all of it. And the work we're doing in emergency care is just as important as this, with very large numbers of patients, because we need to do things quite differently in order to give patients the right safety and the right experience every single day of the week.
So I'm going to take the important point that you made, and you asked for a guarantee that no other services would leave the Ipswich Hospital site, and you made reference, which many of us have lived through in Suffolk and in other areas of the country, where some services, particularly cancer services, have been moved to other trusts as a result of the National Cancer Plan. I'd like to ask Shane to comment on that, please.
Thank you. You're certainly correct that Ipswich has lost a number of services over the years, as has Colchester Hospital. And the reason for that is the same national drive to have fewer centres doing higher volumes of work, because it is a better way to deliver safe, effective, high-quality care for our patients. So the heart services that we were talking about earlier that went to Papworth in this area, on average, they save 20 extra lives a year in Suffolk. So I'm sorry, I don't agree with you if you say that is a bad thing. I think those 20 people a year have their lives saved who would not have their lives saved now. No, and I'm very sorry to hear that story about your colleague. However, more people are alive today because that centralisation was undertaken. The same is true of vascular surgery, that both Colchester and Ipswich had poor outcomes for patients with abdominal aneurysms. They are now in the best 10 in the country from centralising those services. So there is a real strong reason that this happens and the real strong reason for national policy for it to happen. That's not going to go away. So the only way that we keep services, if I can answer your questions, the only way we're going to keep services local is by making the best of the expertise that we've got and concentrating our resources. Ipswich Hospital remains the centre for gynaecology cancer, and patients from Colchester go to Ipswich for the excellent care they get there. If you have a spinal surgical problem, our patients from Colchester, the Colchester area, go to Ipswich. That is the centre. So it is not one-way traffic in either direction between Ipswich and Colchester at all. But the reality is that all small hospitals are losing services because they are not able to sustain the quality of care that is required.
Could I ask you to talk briefly about the merger and the commitments that were made
Absolutely.
About services at that time, which was obviously in July 2018?
It was, and we had a number of public meetings about that as well, and long conversations with our local government colleagues that represent their constituents. So the commitments that we gave in the merger were that we would not close our A&E departments in either hospital, that we would not stop accepting emergency medical patients in either hospital, and that we would not stop providing obstetric-led maternity care in either hospital. But we were very clear at the same time that there would be other services that we needed to look at the way we provided them, and this is the first example. At the moment, it is the only example where existing services we are planning to do differently. However, there are a number of new services, some of which are not provided anywhere in the east of England at the moment, that we will only have a hope of providing locally by providing them at one of our sites. So the example that comes to mind is stroke. The new treatment for stroke is called thrombectomy, and it's mechanically removing the clot from the brain in the way that we, similar to the way that we expand the arteries around the heart now in the specialist heart centres. There is no way that we will be able to provide that service at both sites. It will be quite tricky to get it provided at one site, because at the moment the intention is that's only going to be Cambridge and Norwich. We don't think that's right, and we need to fight to have that service locally for our patients. But we'll only be able to fight for it on one of our sites. And at the moment, the site that's in the best position to do that is Ipswich. So it won't be Colchester.
Thank you. I'm
happy to talk to you more about that afterwards.
I'm going to ask Paul, if you could briefly address, because I've got a number of hands up, the challenge that you made that we only built the Garrett Anderson Centre 10 years ago, and why we're building a new A&E department, and also the issue about potential future developments on the Ipswich site that the gentleman raised. Please, Paul.
Okay, thanks, Rebecca. I guess, firstly, what I would say is, like you, I'm part of Ipswich. I live in Ipswich. I've lived in Ipswich all my life. Ipswich Hospital is the place that I love. I joined Ipswich Hospital in 2015 to make a difference. I fully intend on doing so before I retire. And certainly if you look at the issues around Ipswich Hospital and its ability to build an elective care centre, from my profession, from my expertise, and for the input that me and my team have had in, everything you've heard tonight is absolutely correct. To take your point around the Garrett Anderson Centre, however, that building has been open now nearly 11 years, in fact, just around 11 years. The planning for that was 3 years hence. So anything that's been designed in that building is at least 14 years old in the way of its current designs. Designs have moved on now. Requirements have moved on. Actually, my learned colleagues here talking about recovery from hip and knee operations and being a matter of days. Back in 15, 20 years ago, I know with personal experience of parents and whatever else, that was in measured in weeks and not days. We have seen significant increase in capacity coming through the doors of ED, and simply, it is now too small, quite frankly. And actually, it's a PFI building, so to do anything in that building is very costly, extremely costly. And it has some shortcomings in some of the use of technologies now that we have in place at Ipswich Hospital. So putting the ED into a new place, more closer to diagnostic imaging, putting in the third MRI, putting in an additional CT scanner, and increasing the size of both the majors and the resus area, putting the urgent treatment centre on the front, all of that will address some of the capacity issues we've got in Ipswich with the activity growth that we've seen, significant activity growth. When I joined Ipswich Hospital in 2015 as a director on call, we would see on average around 210 to 220 patients per day. We regularly see over 300 now. So we have no choice but to do something, and we are doing it. With respect to the future of Ipswich Hospital and maybe the myth, if you like, that actually Ipswich is going to be hard done by, actually, so far from the truth. The board approved the state strategy. We've made a summarised version, which is available to the public if you so wish. Clearly states what we're going to be doing there over the next 10 to 20 years. And in fact, the significant proportion of our capital programme is Ipswich biased over the next 10 years. So actually, and with respect, I don't think the slide for Ipswich Hospital does the investment any justice. And I'm more than happy to talk, because I don't think we've got time now, in some of those significant investments that you will see at Ipswich Hospital over the next 2 years. Because actually what I would say is, I'm going to say, as a resident of Ipswich, where my family were born and I lost members of my family as well, that actually the investment in Ipswich Hospital will absolutely see a very different type of Ipswich Hospital over the next 10 years, significant investment, significant improvements, and I'm more than happy to talk that through with you afterwards.
Thank you very much, Paul. Right, I'm going to go to the gentleman in the front row first, because he asked, then the lady next to Stuart, I don't know your name, and then to Mr. Pryke, please. Thank you very much. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, my name's Martin. I'm a disability rights campaigner. And there's one thing that has not been mentioned here, disabled people like myself. Now, I came across something a few days ago. It said, shuttle buses are to take patients from Ipswich to Colchester. How is this going to work for people like me and those others similar to me who can't transfer? How's that going to work? Because the last time I travelled from Ipswich to Colchester by road, it took an hour. Some of us do not travel well. Also, it says here on page 11 of your glossy pamphlet, to simplify the process of preparing patients for surgery, to reduce the overall number of journeys to hospital, this would reduce inconvenience for patients. People who qualify for funded patient transport to hospital would continue to do so and would be taken to the new centre. Now, who are these people who qualify for funded patient transport? Mm-hmm. Are they like social security claimants? Are they the elderly? Are they disabled people? Who are these people who qualify for this funded transport? Also, 3 to 4 day, sort of going home after 3 or 4 days after surgery was mentioned. This also ties into social care. As many people like myself know, social care has been cut to ribbons. So you say, you're in hospital for 3-4 days. What if you're single? You have no one at home to assist you to recover from your surgery. What if there are complications during your surgery? Are Suffolk County Council Social Service going to come galloping to the rescue? No, you're going to be bed blocking. A lot of this stuff has not been thought through. You've not been asking the right questions. You've not been asking the right people. For one, I would not want to go from Ipswich all the way to Colchester, stuck at Colchester for a week or more, then come all the way back and have to fend for myself because there's no one there to assist me, because they can't find somebody from social services to help me. And even if they did, I'll guarantee you it would be something like an hour a day if I'm lucky.
Thank you, Martin. I think you've raised some really important issues about disability access and also about transport. You've also referred to what the jargon we use is eligibility criteria for patient transport, which I'm sure is a phrase you've heard, which I'll ask the panel to comment on, and on social care and support. And I think it might be important for our panel to reference the community hospitals in East Suffolk as part of that. So, Mark, could I ask you, you already mentioned eligibility criteria, could you comment on that again with regard to patient transport, please?
Indeed, and there are eligibility criteria that would need to be ensured that they're appropriate for this particular aspect of care, because it is not humane if we haven't got the right transport arrangements in place for those who have special needs. So we do need to ensure that that is appropriate. And we also need to consider that, I think, as part of post-consultation as to who and how do we ensure that that becomes the appropriate way of giving you the service that you need.
Could I ask Crawford, could you comment on transferring and patient transport and then maybe on the wider issue of social care and community hospitals, please?
So you're absolutely right, this is a huge challenge, and if we look at the scale of our patient numbers overall, we treat 10,000 patients a day. This discussion is about 14 patients a day, so it's even more pertinent because of the large numbers of patients we're treating. We're working very closely within the integrated care system, both with our GP colleagues, the commissioners, but also with social services. So while we absolutely agree with you that the provision of health and social care vitally, it needs to have the right and adequate provision of social care. It's on my experience is that we're seeing a smaller number of patients whose discharge is delayed for social care reasons than we ever have before. We daily look at our patients who are delayed. We absolutely never see them as bed blockers. Every patient wants to be home much more than their doctor does. So the patients whose care is delayed in getting out of hospital, we review on a daily basis, and those numbers are going down. When they go up, we look very closely at what we're doing. We want that number to be as near to zero as possible. And I personally go and see everybody in Ipswich Hospital who's been in more than 21 days so that we can unblock the system issues. It's not a question of blame, but it's a question of thinking, what matters to this patient and what do we need to get right to get them home? So your point couldn't be better made, and it's a big system issue, but it's one that we're working very actively on. We've been successful, but there's a lot more to do, and I'm really keen to work with you and to look at every group, not only the disabled, but each and every person and what their needs are and make sure we meet them in the right way.
And Mark would like to add something, yeah, please.
So when we look at, when talking about social care eligibility as well, because that is a factor in the longer term care issues, in short term care issues, it isn't necessarily the case. And there are support packages for people who we know need rehabilitation at home and assisted help for a period of time that doesn't necessarily come with an eligibility criteria, except through the need that they have to be able to get home.
And Martin, if I may say, we've worked very closely with a number of patient groups forming our proposals, but you've raised some other queries and questions, and you've already heard the panel refer to how we're going to make a decision at the end of this. So it might be that we, if you're happy, we might like to speak to you about whether you'd like to be involved in the decision making at the end to make sure that we hear the very first-hand views of yourself and other friends and members that you might have in your group that could help us understand a little bit more about disability access so that we include that in our decision-making process. So thank you. Great series of questions. The lady next to Stuart, I'll constantly call you that unless you tell me your name. I've just got a microphone coming over to you, and then I'll come to you, Mr. Pryke.
So I'm a member of hospital staff, but more importantly...
I thought I recognised you. Hello, hi.
Hi. But more importantly, I am also the recipient of a hip replacement,
okay,
15 years ago now. So I think the thing that's striking me most of all, I know you say you've had liaison with patient safety group or patient groups, but I feel quite dismissed. It's a huge thing to go into hospital and have joint surgery. It is traumatic. It's scary. I had it as a 40-year-old, so it was, you know, was quite a horrible thing to have done. And then I think of the elderly person who is in, and I'm thinking about access to Relly's visiting and getting to and fro. And I feel like we're talking about cans of beans and not human beings in this whole episode. I don't feel it's very personal to the patient. It's far more accounting, bean counting, whatever you want to call it. And I think the patient experience from a patient has been dismissed. Something else I wanted to say, you were talking about the urgent treatment centre and the ED department, and it was 35 million. Well, the urgent treatment centre is a new thing, isn't it? It's a new entity. So to say that Tim's suggestion of the upgrade of services on both sides would probably be very, very expensive because that's costing 35 million, it's probably a little bit unfair because it's a new part of the service that didn't exist previously. So I don't think you can compare like for like, really. So that's it.
Thank you. Thank you for your points. Just, I'm sorry you feel as you do about patients' involvement, and I think that's a very important point, and I'm happy to speak to you any time about that. We've worked with a number of patient groups, but the one we've worked with most closely is the MSK, the musculoskeletal patient group, and they have been really superb in terms of advising us and tremendously supportive. And I think it's difficult, as Shane mentioned earlier on, we're doing the public consultation almost at the beginning of the process, so there's a huge amount of work to do with our staff and with all our patients to design, if we do agree to proceed with building the building, what it might look like and what the detail is for our patients and how our staff will work there. And actually a number of our consultants and staff are really concerned to get into the detail of that, and quite right too. So
I needed, I fall off my bike next week and I need emergency revision services, and you guys have retired because you're fed up with it all, and so there's no one on site at Ipswich, so then it means, and you know, if the theatre staff are then de-skilled, there are lots of concerns for me, and I'm not talking as a member of staff, I'm talking as a patient.
And we are completely. All patients, and indeed I was a carer for a patient in Ipswich Hospital last week, and I learned a lot about our hospital from that point of view. It was a very useful and enlightening experience. Can I ask Shane to comment? You've raised a really important issue about urgent treatment centres, which are quite a new thing. We've recently opened one on the Colchester site. If I could ask Shane to comment on that, please.
Well, I'd also like to say that I don't think there's any member of staff here or in either of our hospitals or our community services that doesn't have the care of their patients at their heart. I have to say from the inside of it, it is the patients and the quality and the timeliness of their care that we are absolutely concerned with in this, in trying to make that better than it is now, but also be able to continue providing that good care into the future. In terms of your question about the urgent treatment centre, yes, that is a new bit of building, but the suggestion I think that Mr. Brammer is making will also require the building of new space, because there just simply isn't anywhere to put new wards and new theatres at Ipswich at the moment. So that just gives us an estimate of how much building new space costs. Well, I think my esteemed colleague, Mr. Fenton, might be able to comment on that in a moment. But you know, any new space has to be built to the latest NHS standards, and they are fiendishly expensive.
Thank you. Can I ask Mark to comment, please, on your question?
Yes, thanks. I just want to pick up a little on your very excellent and valuable comments. I think, you know, any doctor working in orthopaedics in Colchester and Ipswich would have your interests at heart. That's our training, that's what we do, and I don't think you need to worry on that score. I just would make what you were saying about losing expertise. What we're planning to do is to make a beautiful new elective centre which is going to attract the best people. The alternative is that we have two small centres, and you know they may be not so attractive for the best surgeons to work in the future. So what we're doing is future-proofing with having a good centre, with making it easy to recruit the best people. I don't think that Ipswich will have a problem recruiting excellent surgeons. There are lots of beautiful places to live between Ipswich and Colchester, and there's a very good set of colleagues in Ipswich. So I don't accept what you're saying about losing expertise. I think we all gain expertise.
And could I ask for a comment from Mark Shenton, please?
Thank you. I'm an incomer to Suffolk. I'm a Geordie, but I've been in Suffolk since 1990, when I joined Ipswich Hospital, and I did do a bit of time in the orthopaedic team for a few months with Mr. Howlett, who was my surgeon that I looked up to, and fantastic horses he has as well. And I've done my training locally, both east and west. I did my GP training, and I've been in Stowmarket for 25 years. My challenge really to us as a community of clinicians is, how do we make the best of this opportunity? We've got a merged trust. We can't get away from that. How do we get a dream of a sustainable clinical community of our nurses, therapists, consultants working to that common aim of the best outcomes? And I hear what you say about having best outcomes now, really top class. I know that. I look at those performance data every month as part of my role as a CCG governing body member. And I don't think this centre can be looked at in its isolation from that aspect of how do we, you know, at the end of the line from the west heading east, we've only got the North Sea as our neighbour going east. How do we attract, retain, develop the best teams when we know that actually the push is to get that sustainable level for specialism? And, you know, I've seen the heart stuff, the head and neck stuff go from here. Stroke, I think there's an opportunity with stroke. I actually work with the stroke teams of West Suffolk, Ipswich and Colchester, and challenging them to think about how do they work as one team on three sites to create the sustainability and potentially provide the opportunity for further specialists, the academic work that, you know, specialist colleagues really enjoy, the training and the recruitment that we are going to need to be sustainable, and the development opportunities that come as being a bigger team. So I'm not here with the answer to that. I'm here with the challenge to it as to how we do help the teams get that dream.
Thank you very much. I'm going to thank you for the panel, for the questions. We've got about 10 minutes, 12 minutes left now, so I'm going to take a question from Mr. Pryke, and I think there might be time for a couple more. Steve. Thank you.
Hi there. Tomorrow morning, I am, tomorrow, my daily work schedules, I've got two revision hips tomorrow, and I'm doing those with those five people in that picture behind you. And I just want to ask you about how you've consulted with them about what they think would be best for the future. Because I know from speaking to all of them, working with them every week, that none of the theatre staff have been involved in any consultation with any of the transformation board. And I know from speaking to those five very experienced health professionals that none of them will go and work in Colchester. So all those, that whole theatre team, highly skilled in arthroplasty, none of them will move to Colchester. So all their expertise will be lost as soon as the day that theatre tape is cut. And each of those people, two of them have been working at Ipswich doing arthroplasty for the last 20 years. One we've spent the last 4 years training, and she's now an excellent scrub nurse. One is a newly qualified ODP who won't go to Colchester. And the other person is our excellent theatre assistant who delivers all the patients to Ipswich, who will not go and work at Colchester. Similarly, if you speak to our ward staff, none of our ward staff has been consulted. I know that several of them have sent in comments which have not been well received by the powers that be in the hospital, which I don't think shows any form of open communication between the staff and the transformation board. And again, all those skills will be lost the day that the tape is cut at the new orthopaedic centre. And that really troubles me, not for me at all, but it's for the staff and the patients that the staff look after day in, day out. Second point I wanted to raise was with regard to the difficulty in appointing highly skilled staff in the future. And I know, Mark, that you think that's not going to be a problem and that people will want to work at Colchester and Ipswich equally in the future. And that's an experiment
I think the challenge is...
No, it was Mark Loeffler.
All right.
And that's an experiment we're running at the moment, because, as you know, at the moment, we are attempting to appoint surgeons, arthroplasty surgeons, at both Ipswich and Colchester. And I've seen every candidate that's applied for that job that's been shortlisted. And I've asked all of them explicitly, do you want to work at Ipswich or would you rather work at Colchester? And unanimously, all of them said my first choice would be to work at Colchester. So that, therefore, it's a logical thought to say, well, actually, we are going to start to struggle to appoint people to Ipswich because people don't want to work on two sites. And we will start appointing second-best candidates, and that will further downgrade the performance of Ipswich and the service we offer to our patients. So I'm afraid that I simply do not buy the arguments that you're suggesting, and I simply do not buy that you have consulted widely with the staff at Ipswich that are going to be affected by the changes that you're intending to make.
Thank you, Steve. Really important points about the whole team, and we have 10,000 staff across our hospitals, and every single one of them cares for our patients every day in multidisciplinary teams. Shane, could I ask you to talk a little bit about the process and the work we have done with staff, but most importantly the work that's coming with staff at the end of the public consultation, because it is complex and we're constrained by national legislation laid down in the 2012 Health and Social Care Act. But I'll ask Shane to just explain that in a little bit more detail.
I think I said in my presentation that although we have been engaging for some time, I think we started our conversations with you and your colleagues nearly 2 years ago now, and we have been engaging with ward staff. We had on our panel this morning one of the matrons for orthopaedic surgery who's been closely involved in the programme for all of that time. I think although we have done that, we recognise that this step in the process comes very early on in the detailed planning. And there is a lot of detailed planning, including the formal consultation with staff about what their roles might be in the future, which is yet to come. And we did a lot of that in the merger with some groups of our staff and had similar conversations about I don't want to do that, I'll never do that. But when we work through the detail of that with staff groups, it is remarkable how, on understanding the detail, people change their minds about what is possible and what their ambitions are. So I can't speak for your colleagues, they're not here this evening, but my experience over the last several years in doing this is that when people get the opportunity to be involved in the future of their service, they get the opportunity to influence it and to lead those changes. And that does move people. It changes their perspective on what is possible.
I think we're in for a surprise.
We have different experiences in the last few years.
I'm conscious of time, sir. We are also speaking directly to the teams you've referred to next Wednesday, the 18th of March, in an audit half day when they're actually available to have a conversation with, so it's just important for you to be aware of that. I've spoken to Matt Glenn, and he's going to make sure that some of the staff you've talked about at every level are available so they can ask the questions that they've got. Well, I'm happy to talk to you about that at the end to make sure we get the right people involved. Mark,
Yes, Steve, I'm going to answer your question about recruitment because I think you're being a little disingenuous. I didn't know that the surgeons applying for the jobs in Esner favoured Colchester over Ipswich. You haven't had the interviews. But if that is so, I do not think it's anything to do with the elective orthopaedic centre. It is probably because Colchester is, as you know, the most popular orthopaedic centre for training in the eastern region, and Ipswich is not. Now, I personally have done something over the last year to try and improve it, and I think as a department, if that is improved, then the recruitment gets much, much easier. That's always what we found, and I think that is more recruitment is more to do with that than anything to do with geography. Ipswich is a beautiful place to live.
Thank you. Now, I think I've got time for one very brief question and then I'm going to sum up. Yes, sir.
Shame that if you could just explain to me again as a layman, the maths didn't seem to add up. And I wrote this down. So the plan for this new, and it's on the first or second slide if you want to bring it up, but you, and I wrote this down, you said there was going to be up to 6 new theatres, quotes, is our aim in time. Now, one of the gentlemen on my left, and I don't know which one, said there's currently 4 in Ipswich. Five. Up to, but that, so I wrote the word and underlined it, ambition.
Do you mean the slide?
Yes.
Thank you.
So that's an ambition. I would like to be a millionaire next year. That's my ambition. That's not a fact.
Okay.
So you're stating ambitions. Can you explain how, so on day one, it's not going to have 6?
Thank you, Shane.
So I think Mr. Loughlin mentioned earlier that we're not actually losing any of the existing theatres for other elements of orthopaedics. We are adding 5 extra theatres into the mix, and that's critically important for capacity. So it's not that we are going down or even staying the same in the number of theatres. We are gaining theatres for orthopaedics. However, at the moment, when we look at the way our theatres are used, because of the way we are able to use the beds, particularly not having enough of them at the moment, our theatres are unused for over 40% of the time in the normal working week, not out of hours, that they could be used for operating. And it's partly because we have no capacity in the elective beds.
Thank you, sir. If we could allow Shane to answer the question.
I can answer the question. So we're not using the theatres we've got as well as we can. We have modelled quite carefully and in great detail the way in which we will use these beds without the cancellations issue and the emergency patients occupying the elective beds. We can operate much more smoothly through the week, and that means we can get more patients through the same number of theatres that we're using. So the reason we're not putting a 6th theatre in at the moment is it's very expensive to have a theatre. It's a number of millions of pounds.
But as your colleague here talked about, only 11 years ago, A&E in Ipswich has now suddenly become...
Exactly.
Not, you know, so
that's why we've planned...
That's all very vague, isn't it?
No, it's not vague at all. We need
up
5.
Two?
We need 5.
Could be 2. Could it be 2?
If I can answer the question. We need 5 to begin with. We estimate that around 8 to 10 years' time, we will need a 6th. That's why we've put in capacity in the centre to expand to a 6th theatre. However, kitting out a 6th theatre now will just cost millions of pounds, and it will sit gathering dust. So that's not a good use of taxpayers' money. We'll put that 6th theatre in when it is required, and there is space in the centre to do that.
Thank you, Shane. And on that very specific answer and question, I'm going to draw the meeting to a close because it is now 8 o'clock and I don't want to overrun. We've heard a range of issues. I'm not going to repeat them. I think you're all aware of what they are. But I would like to thank all of you in the audience for turning out this evening and contributing such excellent questions to allow such a rich discussion. As you've heard, a lot of debate. You've heard comments in favour of the proposals and comments and concerns that raise queries and questions about them, which will be addressed in the public consultation. Please, can I urge you in the public consultation to, you know, submit your views, whether they're in favour of the unit or if you've got questions or queries against them, do submit them and encourage your friends, colleagues, relatives to do so as well. And may I also thank the panel for taking time to listen to your queries and hopefully to provide you with very honest and factual answers and questions. The consultation is open for another 3 weeks and then there'll be the decision-making process, so you have lots more time to either come to meetings or to make your views known. So thank you very much, everybody, and safe journey home.